Welcome to the NLC Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are reacting to the Deshaun Watson suspension. So I will be releasing this podcast mid-morning, actually on Monday. So this will be the reaction podcast. So Deshaun Watson suspended 6 games. What does that mean for Dynasty? I think he instantly vaults himself into being a first-round startup pick. He vaults himself up being as high as a top-6 pick. There's very little that to me that keeps him out of the top 6. If you're just going to look at our RDP right now, Josh Allen 1, Mahomes 2, Herbert 3, tier break. You then go, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. I'm sorry, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. They're in a two-pick median range, right, between 106 and 107. And then it's a mini break after that for the quarterbacks, Dak Prescott at 110. And then you get sort of the rest of the guys down there in the second, third range of being Jalen Hurts, Trey Lance, Russell Wilson, Stafford's in there as well. Deshaun Watson was at 212. He should vault. Him and Jalen Hurts isn't even a question, right? There's no debate there. Him or Trey Lance, there's no debate there. So, and then it's a question of like, I'm just going from the cheapest you could make him. I guess you could take those guys over him, but reasonably, like you take him over Najee Harris and instantly then he's into the first round. I wouldn't take any non-quarterback above him. So that, to me, puts him in the top, 6 or 7, 8 picks, depending on how you do that. I wouldn't put Joe Burrow ahead of him because I think Burrow's bound for regression. We've seen basically every form and fashion of which Watson can perform top 6 finishes. We haven't seen that with Burrow yet. That's an easy AOD applied is very easy. Deshaun Watson over Joe Burrow. That's not a difficult decision. I think more where the decision lies, again, I wouldn't take Burrow where he's at ADP-wise. I think more your decision lies is in Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott range. I think I have more confidence in Watson than I do in Kyler Murray. And I think in Lamar Jackson, just because I think that he has more proven and he's more stable. He's more stable contractually than Lamar Jackson is. I think he's more stable on the field. I have a better understanding of who he is as a player than I do Kyler Murray. And if I'm going to spend a top 5 pick on a quarterback, I'm going to do it on one I trust on the field a little bit more than Kyler Murray does. Right. So that's kind of where I'm at. With it. So I think, if you look, Deshaun Watson, it will be 27. Kyler Murray will be 25. So there's not a big difference there age-wise either. Lamar Jackson is actually 2 years or so younger than Deshaun Watson is. So I don't think it's a huge difference. And again, if you're making decisions on quarterbacks in their mid-20s, like, you don't do it based on age, right? You do it based on level of comfort and all that. I think however you feel, right? This is a spot where I admit that I have a hard time sort of distinguishing between guys, is sort of in that Kyler, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott range. I think Deshaun Watson goes in at 104 for me. If you say you have him in that range, but you like other players, I don't think that's an unreasonable take either. I have him in there because I'm going to bet on the career leader in yards per attempt. I'm going to bet on the top 3 guy in the history of the NFL in terms of passing stats and in terms of passing efficiency, in terms of yards per attempt, and I'm going to bet on him. I did a piece over at Football Guys and I might even actually put this stuff here on the site, but I'll read it here. I think I've discussed it before, but it bears mentioning if we're wondering how he comes back from this. I'll read some of it here. Watson's been a consistent high-end fantasy starter. His fantasy future is complicated by 2 factors, sitting out a full season in his trade to Cleveland. The history of quarterbacks actually sitting out a full season returning is surprisingly good. Andrew Luck finished as quarterback 4 in 2016. He missed the entire 2017 season with shoulder surgery. He then returned and finished as quarterback 4 again before returning, so no difference. Ryan Tannehill is a little bit more muddled. He was 26 before he missed the entire season with a torn ACL in 2017. He returned and played 11 games in 2018. He saw a 2-point reduction in points per game and missed some time with an unrelated injury. So he kind of, and then he rebounded and posted quarterback 23 finish in only 10 games in Tennessee the following year. And then he was quarterback 8 the year after that. So, it's a little bit roller coastery as Ryan Tannehill's career has been, but I don't think you definitely can't say that being out that time missed him. Mahomes sat out a year in his rookie year and then finished quarterback 1. That's an easy one. Mike Vick finished his quarterback 3. Again, some of these are a little bit complicated. Finished his quarterback 3 in 2016, missed 2007 and 2008 going to prison. He then returned in 2009 as a role player before finishing in 2010 as quarterback 3. So that's what, 3 full seasons. He missed basically 3 full seasons of starting. He missed the 2007 season, 2008 season, 2009 season. He returns as a starter in 2010, and that was only on 12 games. So he finished quarterback 3 on only 12 games. In those 12 games, he averaged 29.2 points per game, which is 5.4 points better than Aaron Rodgers, who finished his quarterback 1 on the season. So in terms of per-game scoring, he was the best quarterback by a not even close margin. I remember those games. I remember working the library at the law school and like watching a Sunday night game and just being like, this is insane how good he had come back. So I remember that, lived through that. So so he certainly didn't fall off as a result of being out, and he was out under harsher circumstances as well. Again, I mentioned the Mahomes thing. I actually think maybe the best comp is Peyton Manning. So he finished his quarterback 6-4-4 the prior 3 years. So that's like kind of right in that window of what Deshaun Watson was doing of top six. It's all he's ever known really is top six finishes. And then he missed the entire 2011 season with a neck injury. He then signed with the Broncos after being released by the Colts. And in his first season with the Broncos, he finished as quarterback 4 at 36 years old. He followed up that season with quarterback 1 finish in one of the greatest seasons in the history of the NFL in 2013. That would have been 2 years off of his missed year. So I don't think, I've seen it percolate a little bit. I was going to do its own pod on this, but I'm just going to put it here. I don't think the fact that he missed time, anyone that says that's doing lazy analysis, right? There's no sense of prize. There's no sense of analysis there. But yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. I think if you're going to dock him for being out, I think you have to dock him for being out for this year. I think in redraft, that might make some sense. I mean, and here's what I would say about redraft, right? If you're in redraft, like he's going in the teens, honestly, pairing him with a guy like Trey Lance, I think makes a ton of sense because they kind of complement each other. I think that makes a ton of sense. In Dynasty, I think there's a number of ways in which you can solve this. You could stream Brissett. You can try and stream other backups if you don't have a good option. I would recommend guys like Goff, guys like Goff, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz are good examples. Jameis Winston, Baker Mayfield might actually give you a shot at a long-term starter if you want to speculate. So I'll just run down some costs, some recent trades that I've seen. Goff for Michael Gallup, Goff for Tyler Beatty in 2/3 and a 1/4, right? I mean, that's just cheap. Even if he's not a long-term starter, that sort of fixes you and sort of backs you up this year. That's fine. Matt Ryan for 209 this year in a rookie draft that hasn't happened yet. Carson Wentz and Alexander Mattison for Kenny Galladay, 1/3 and a 1/4. That's just like dirt cheap for Carson Wentz. I actually like that cost. Jameis Winston and Darnell Mooney for Desmond Ridder, George Pickens in 1/3. That's like an unbelievably great trade. Someone paid Kadarius Toney for Baker Mayfield, right? Those are the types of trades you're looking at. I love those, like sort of going from depth at other positions, even depth at picks. Like there wasn't a second spent there except a second this year on Matt Ryan. So, I mean, I think those are all some really good solutions there. I don't think that this necessitates like the, I call this like the Derek Carr solution, which is kind of like the year-long starter solution. And the reason I sort of hesitate towards going that way is spending money on a quarterback to fill in for Watson is it's going to become suboptimal. What do I mean by that? Well, I look at this totally through the lens of what's the lineup that I want to put out there in the in a semifinals game, in a finals game. Right? Like what's the lineup that what's the thing that most increases my championship equity? Well, number one's a bye, but number two is having a lineup with a bunch of stars in it, right? Having a bunch of good people in my lineup. If I spend picks on Derek Carr, it then requires me to trade him, right? And then to send Derek Carr out to get more picks or to get a player back, right? To sort of do that deal to most optimize my finals roster. If I'm doing that, I'm most likely sending Derek Carr to a team that has issues or has problems with quarterback that is a contender, because that's probably who's buying in on Derek Carr. And so then I'm instantly trading him to a competitor. I would kind of rather let the league sort that thing out on its own. And I would tend to say, all right, if I'm going to sort of go out and make a deal in reaction to the Watson, again, I don't think you need to rush and be nervous about this. But I do think if you want to look at, you know, going out and making a deal, like a half measure, go out and trade the pick that you'd trade for Derek Carr or for the quarterback or Kirk Cousins or whoever that sort of that I call it the Derek Carr solution, but the Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, that mid-career quarterback that isn't really a star, right? It doesn't have like an elite history that you're probably not projecting for elite like super max type trajectory. And go from, you know, and don't make that, but instead make the player that can sort of fill in for that, like use what you would do for that cost. So for example, like go spend on Kamara, go spend on Dalvin Cook. You know, heck, you could even go cheaper than that. You could go Leonard Fournette, you could go James Conner. You know, like go that type of response. The other thing I could do is like go use this opportunity to make an investment into a guy like Dallas Goedert, right? And in tight end premium, you could stream a guy like Dallas Goedert in your super flex spot and be fine for 6 weeks. Like that, you're going to be okay. You can go ahead and do that and just be totally fine. So, and like that again, what does that do? That's additive to your lineup, right? You can play Dallas Goedert, you can play Deshaun Watson in the same lineup come November, December, January, right? Whenever you're playing your fantasy playoffs, those things are additive instead of leaving, you know, a high priced sort of fill in on your bench through the end of the season. I do think there's potentially you could stream this. Again, it's tough to stream the position. If we've had Watson, we've probably been thinking ahead enough to sort of coming up with some solutions, right? So, but I do think like if you are met with a problem where, you know, there's you lose someone in week one, for example, you can stream, you know, you could potentially stream backups, right? There will be certainly backups. It's been like north of 50 guys have started each year in the NFL in terms of starters. So there will be injuries. There will be different guys that will start. You know, you can potentially do that. Again, if it is super flex, right, we don't like to sort of not play quarterbacks in the super flex, but I wouldn't bankrupt my team to put a quarterback in the super flex. I wouldn't do that because you sort of – I think it runs – counter to your long-term ambitions by doing that. So that's sort of thought. I do think there's a big payoff potentially for Amari Cooper and David Joku. The thing about Cooper that I would say is like when you actually look at Cooper, I wonder how like what type of ceiling he has, like who he could really go above. That's as I was sort of looking at this, and I was doing the same thing for a Football Guys article. Guys right around him are sort of above him in median startup draft position. Allen Robinson, Amon-Ra St. Brown. There's actually almost a round gap between Amari Cooper and Amon-Ra St. Brown. But then you get into the Darnell Mooney range. You get up into the Mike Williams, Cortland Sutton range right there, a round ahead of him. Up above that is Olave, Keenan Allen, Devonta Smith, Jameson Williams, Jerry Jeudy, Treylon Burks. Those are all guys within two rounds of him. Elijah Moore is also within two rounds of him, and Garrett Wilson. And then you start getting up into the low 20s. Marquise Brown, Chris Godwin, Rashad Bateman, McLaurin, Evans are all like three rounds ahead of him. I'd be struggle to see how he's going to sort of press up above, you know, how he's going to press up above a guy like Keenan Allen, who's going like a round ahead of him. So I do think that this helps Amari Cooper, but I don't know, you know, do you take him maybe a round earlier? Does this make you feel better about him than Allen Robinson? Probably. Does this make you feel about better than him or Amon-Ra St. Brown? I probably would have went Amari Cooper anyways, but sort of yes. You know, maybe him over Mike Williams, him over Cortland Sutton. Like, all right, like we could have that debate. Like, I think those are the right types of conversations to have. Olave is a little bit different of a player in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. But then you sort of butt up against Allen, and I can't put him ahead of Keenan Allen. So, again, does he go up in price? Yeah. It's around, yeah. Is it a, like, is it super consequential, super meaningful? Probably not, right? That's sort of the angle that I would say about him there. So, again, I think this is a good sign. And maybe you take a shot on a guy like Donovan Peoples-Jones or someone like that to potentially, try and, you know, get some different options there. I do think Njoku has more, at least relative, room to go up. But again, I think he might quickly run into some ceiling stuff. Considering as well, like the number of like a half season was baked into what this RDP was, it's now down to only six games. It's not a massive difference, right? So if you were sort of coming at this and this number was like, oh, he's expected to miss two full seasons, and then all of a sudden it's six games, like it would move the number more. But the number of 6 to 12 games was baked in there. I mean, we were projecting like 8 missed games for him at Football Guys. Like, that's 6 games is like in Dynasty, right? It's that's about the same number it should be anyways. So it shouldn't move him too much. But I do think, you know, the more certainty should help him. A guy's like within a round of Njoku include Albert Okwunnum, Trey McBride, Irv Smith, Mike Gesicki. Right, that's just within a round, and then you sort of look up above that. You get guys like Ertz and Noah Fant, and then Komet's like a round ahead of those guys. I think probably all along, Njoku ahead of Albert O makes some sense. I would take Njoku ahead of McBride. Take Njoku ahead of Irv Smith. That hasn't super changed much for me. Yeah, we could sort of have the debate about, like, is Komet a little bit overpriced? You know, I think maybe the best argument for a guy like Njoku is, like, all right, would you rather have, you know, I don't know, Pat Freiermuth at tight end 9 or wait 4 rounds and have David Njoku? Right, like that's kind of the deal that I would like think about, right? Like, I think that makes that argument even more persuasive. I think if the market really overreacts, like it could be an opportunity to sell David Njoku. You know, if you could get, I don't know if like first round rookie picks are going to be available for a guy like him in tight end premium spots, but like I would certainly do that. I'm just looking here at the most recent trades for Njoku. Cousins in a first for Njoku, that's kind of cheap. There's like Greg Dulcich and John Johnson in IDP. That's not a ton there. There's not really a ton of like just stuff like him. Like, here's one that I would do. I'd give Njoku in a 112 for Kittle. Like, if that market opened up, I'd do that. Again, that was back more in May. There hasn't been a ton of market movement here on Njoku recently, where it's just him specifically for players, but or him specifically for picks or anything like that. So, but again, if he's going to get that, like, if he's going to get like a top 10 valuation, I'm interested in selling that, especially using it as an upgrade piece, right? Sort of pivoting up from him. The other things that I'm watching in Cleveland include, and I'm going to do a Cleveland pod. I'm actually having Adam on to do a Cleveland pod this week. The one thing that I'm thinking about with Cleveland is what's the status of Kareem Hunt? I think that's an interesting one. The suspension doesn't really change that monetarily, so that's, I think, a point worth noting as well. This doesn't change Kareem Hunt's monetary world. The big numbers for Watson set in next year. So that's really the stuff that I'm thinking about there. Again, maybe this gives you some more added attention into some of the ancillary guys for Cleveland, which we'll cover in the Cleveland show. But those are really my big thoughts there. So it's also worth noting as an aside, I said this a while ago, and I still believe this, right? The worst place in the world for the reaction to a Deshaun Watson suspension is Twitter. My best friend from high school works for the New York Jets. He sells tickets. I don't think he's ever met an NFL player. I'm not saying that to insult him, but his day-to-day job is so devoid of anything involving the actual team of the New York Jets that I couldn't get inside information from him if I wanted to. Like, if he wanted to give it to me, I couldn't get it from him. And we just went out for breakfast, and and he was up in town, so I saw him. You know, we my wife and I went and met him, and he just in passing, it was remarkable. In passing, he's like, "Yeah, it's like I can't even get a DraftKings account." And I was like, "Wait a second, what?" He's like, "Yeah, I can't get a DraftKings account." He goes, I can't do any of that stuff. Like I can't even bet on baseball. He goes, I can't get a DraftKings account. I can't bet on baseball. We have a fantasy league, but besides that, like, that's all I can really do. We basically say it's like not for money. You know, it's like a kind of like a home league type deal. But he goes, yeah, I can't in any way bet or have a DraftKings account or have a FanDuel account or anything like that. And, He goes, I can go to a casino and I can bet on horses, but that's basically it. And so there might have been one other thing, but it was like non-sports related. The idea that this is somehow, that the Calvin Ridley thing is, the Calvin Ridley suspension is, should be negated because of this is insane. It is insane. Everyone in the NFL, including my best friend from high school, who couldn't, I don't know if he could find the Jets field, but works for the Jets and, is as far away from the actual operation of the Jets in any sort of decision-making process, front office related process, player selection, inside information, anything, nothing. He's got couldn't help me if I wanted to pay him to be a source for me. He knows that he can't bet on games. Right? He knows he can't bet on baseball. He knows he can't bet on the NBA. He knows he can't bet on the Jets or any other NFL game or pick guys in DraftKings contests or FanDuel contests or whatever. I mean, it's clear as day. So anyone sort of making that comparison is, I think, kind of blind to the simplicity of that rule, and why that rule is very important, and how this is very much different. And so I just sort of wanted to point that out. So for what inside information I did want to get from him, he gave me that. So all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. And until next time, I'll have a podcast tomorrow. This is a breaking news podcast. This is the benefit of being an AOD subscriber. You can get stuff within an hour or so of when it happens. That'll do it for this edition. Till next time, continue bracing the variance. Talk again very soon.